All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today's June 9th, 2026. Our top story this morning, OpenAI has filed confidentially for their IPO. All right, so we've known this one was coming. We got SpaceX, we got Anthropic also filed confidentially. So what's going on here? There's a little bit of backroom disagreement going on in this company that I think it's important for people to understand. There's some text in the story about the confidential filing that OpenAI has put out. They're saying that deliberations are ongoing, that they haven't decided on timing yet, and that there are things that we want to do that are easier as a private company. So, you know, maybe I'm just splitting hairs here, but I think they're actually saying quite a bit there in those comments. Deliberations ongoing. So there's not universal agreement within the company about when to take this thing public. Timing is uncertain. There are things we want to do that are easier as a private company. You know, like keep hidden the fact that our books are a complete freaking mess and that we burn money at a rate that was once considered unfathomable. Yeah, that's a lot easier to do as a private company than when you have publicly traded investors breathing down your neck. And I think these comments that were made in this confidential filing, or the company statement surrounding this confidential filing, has a lot to do with CFO Sarah Friar. Their chief financial officer has been, there was a lot of stories earlier this year, like in April and then again in May, that Sarah Friar doesn't want this thing to go public this year. She wants to wait until 2027 because, well, the books are a freaking mess at OpenAI. And of course, Sam Altman wants what Sam Altman wants, and he's a complete freaking sociopath who just takes whatever he wants via theft, deceit, whenever it suits him. And so he's kind of sidelined Sarah Friar. She's been left out of very high-profile investment meetings and things like that recently. There's been a lot of stories to that effect. I mean, when you're pitching your company to investors and the CFO isn't there, that's kind of a big deal. She doesn't want this IPO to happen this year, but Sam Altman understands and knows that there is a rapidly closing window to get this thing out. And look, we've already got the stories about companies cutting back their spend. That's largely due to Anthropic and token maxing and, you know, companies that had unlimited budgets or had unlimited demand. And then all of a sudden they switch over to token-based billing and they're like, what just happened? Our clawed budget for the whole year was just wiped out by April. That's what happened at Uber. Walmart cut back their spending. And as all this was going on, as the token maxing sticker shock was happening, you also got Anthropic very quietly or publicly lapped OpenAI. They're now the biggest AI company. And most people consider OpenAI to be arguably the third best offering in the space behind Google's Gemini and Anthropic's Claude. So yeah, OpenAI, they've got an ever-shrinking window to get this thing done, but the CFO doesn't want to do it. Now, as this is going on, we had a crazy back and forth in Korean stocks over the last two trading days. 16% in total movement in the index, down 8.4% yesterday and up 8.2% today. More than 16% round trip. As to borrow from the phrase in Korean media, the ants, they're calling them. That's the term for retail day traders in South Korea. The ants are driving like wild men, levered up to their eyeballs. Now, 16%, down 8% one day, up 8% the next. It's not unheard of. This has happened before in South Korean stocks. It happened during the Asian contagion of 1997 when Asian bond markets collapsed. It happened during the dot-com crash. It also happened during the global financial crisis, the GFC, 2008, and it happened in March of 2020 during COVID. So you can now put the AI bubble in that category, even though stocks still hovering near all-time highs, but we're getting swings in Korean markets that we've only ever seen during like generational market catastrophes. Oh, I'm sure this bubble is just going to end great for everybody involved. Now we've got China, according to Bloomberg, according to this anonymously sourced article in Bloomberg, China is supposedly preparing a $295 billion national AI build-out plan. Again, this is anonymously sourced, people familiar with the matter. And it's also very suspiciously timed. Let me explain why I think it's suspiciously timed. China has built maybe one-tenth of the data center capacity that the United States has built. They built it largely using chips that were smuggled into the country and illegally sold by companies like NVIDIA and Supermicro, while they're all like, oh no, those sales went to Singapore and Malaysia. But they have not gone cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs in China like they have here with data centers in the United States. Now, late last week, we get this meltdown in stocks. President Trump comes out and says, we're going to take stakes in the AI companies, i.e. bail out the AI bubble, you know, also we could win the race with China, which isn't even running in the race. And then magically a day later, we have this anonymously sourced article that says China is working on this massive multi-hundred billion dollar plan. Well, you know, we never would have made it to the moon if we didn't have the Russians to beat. And so I guess Bloomberg's trying to gin up this story about if we don't, the Chinese will. So might as well have the taxpayers foot the bill for Sam Altman's exit liquidity via the IPO. Sure, why not? We've got Taiwan is considering stricter export controls on chips to China. This is kind of interesting. Taiwan doesn't actually have the export controls the United States has, even though Taiwan has cracked down on some of those illegal exports, mainly using local laws like falsified paperwork and things like that to prosecute three people with Supermicrocomputer, not to be confused with the three people the United States is prosecuting at Supermicrocomputer, not to be confused with the people Singapore is prosecuting for chip smuggling. But Taiwan getting in on the chip export controls to China now. As this is going on, we've got CoreWeave is reaching out to people, debt investors in Europe. CoreWeave's trying to raise debt. They're not saying how much, but they're trying to sell some Euro junk bonds now to add on top of CoreWeave's existing $35 billion debt pile, which it's $35 billion if you include lease obligations. CoreWeave is a giant pile of debt next to a giant pile of rapidly depreciating GPUs. That's it. That's the company. And it loses money, and its prospects are not improving. They're getting worse as time goes on. But, you know, NVIDIA just keeps giving them money, and they keep buying NVIDIA's chips with it. Now they're going to take a shot at getting some European investors to buy some of their debt so they can keep buying NVIDIA's chips. And as all this is going on, there's another article in Bloomberg today. I don't have it in the stack, but CoreWeave's founders have now sold about a quarter of all of their stock in the company, several billion dollars worth combined, their three founders since the IPO. And Magnetar Capital has dumped more than half of their stock in CoreWeave. So congratulations if you bought CoreWeave stock over the last year. You are exit liquidity for Magnetar Capital, some of the biggest sleaze bags in the history of Wall Street. We've got Kuwait is, for the first time since the start of the war, offering to sell oil to Asian buyers. And here's the important thing. That oil has already left the Strait of Hormuz. So apparently the Kuwaitis are successful in getting at least some oil out of the Strait. Estimates are somewhere around 1.5 to 2 million barrels per day are getting past the Iranian blockade. As this is going on, we've got fertilizer markets have now wiped out the price spike that happened at the start of the Iran war. That is largely due to, I believe it was last week or the week before that, the Chinese lifted their ban on exports of fertilizer. Still not at levels, at pre-war levels, but it seems the Chinese lifting that export ban has really reduced fertilizer prices worldwide. Couldn't come soon enough. Farmers are really struggling here. And the Chinese are also, through fewer imports of oil, kind of floating the global oil market as well. We got small business optimism in the United States fell to 95.3 last month. That is the lowest since October of 2024, but it's the why that's interesting. Don't focus so much on the level, the why. Rising prices, supply chain disruptions were cited as the biggest cause of angst among small businesses. And a lot of them have plans, almost one third of them have plans to raise prices in the future, and another third have already raised prices. That's important because we got CPI tomorrow. And even though oil prices may have stopped going up, that big shock that happened in February and March is still working its way through. So we've got a big jump that's coming probably in core inflation as those price hikes come through. And well, are we going to get a four handle on CPI tomorrow? I guess we'll just have to wait and see. By the way, guys, I don't know how much of this sound has come through. I'm having work done in the next room here. I hope it's not too loud, but we're just going to go through. Also, last but not least, screwworm update. Yep, that 2020's bingo chip that keeps getting called. 3 more cases yesterday of New World screwworm, including one in a dog in New Mexico outside the quarantine area. Yikes. That's kind of horrifying. Guys, we got a lot to talk about once again this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head? Let's see what's going on in the world today. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the algorithm so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this every business day. And right now, the S&P 500 is higher by 39 points, a little more than 0.5% in the green. We've got the Dow is up 216 points, 0.43% to the upside. And the NASDAQ is leading the way higher, up 0.95%, 276 points on top of roughly the same amount that they gained yesterday. The NASDAQ has now recovered about half of what it lost in that bloodbath on Friday. The dollar is weaker this morning, 99.68, down 32 basis points. Lower fuel prices helping with that. And I think this is the 38th time in 39 days that a peace deal has been imminent in the Middle East. That's probably helping. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are a little bit lower here. The 30-year yield is off by about a half a point, 5.020. The 10-year yield's at 4.545, off by almost 1 point. The 2-year is down nearly 2 points, 4.139%. And the 1 month is off by a half a point, 3.670. Bitcoin is down again this morning, $62,603 is priced on Coinbase. Lower by about $450. It was down a little bit here. Bitcoin had its good day on Sunday, and now it looks like we're resuming a grind lower. Not a lot happening. Stretch, the MicroStrategy preferred stock, the shareholders approved. They're going to semi-monthly dividends now. They're going to pay out their dividends twice a month. That was really the only news. Nothing really happening in Bitcoin at this moment. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got gold is a little bit higher this morning, $4,342 for spot gold. That's higher by 12.5 bucks, about 0.3%. Spot silver is at 68.73, higher by 56 cents, or 0.82% in the green. I like the shiny. Copper's up by 1.5%. Platinum is up by 1.4%. Palladium higher by 3.5%. And crude oil is a little bit lower here, down almost $2. $89.39 for July WTI futures. That's off by 2% this morning. But the big story, of course, is the OpenAI IPO. We got this one in Bloomberg. OpenAI files confidentially for IPO as rivals compete for cash. And that rivals compete for cash, that's why they're doing this. Again, there's a lot of disagreement within the C-suite at OpenAI over whether they should do this, but the rivals are going ahead. Anthropic is happening. SpaceX is happening on Friday this week. And so OpenAI needs to get this done before all the money gets dried up, because, hey, Google and Meta are out there raising cash via share issuance too. There may not be enough liquidity left by the time OpenAI gets this out the door. OpenAI, the maker of ChatGPT, filed confidentially for an IPO, joining AI rivals and tapping public markets to fund ambitious growth plans. The Sam Altman-led firm submitted paperwork for an initial public offering with the U.S. Securities Exchange Commission. The company said on Monday, OpenAI is working with Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley on a potential listing as soon as this fall. People familiar with the matter have said deliberations are ongoing and details of the IPO plan could change. We have not decided on timing yet. It may be a while because there are things we want to do that are likely easier as a private company, OpenAI said. But it's a complicated set of trade-offs, and this gives us the option to go public sooner if that ends up being best. In other words, our CEO and our CFO are fighting over whether or not to do this year or next year. We're going to go ahead and file to do it this year, mostly because Sam Altman has already sidelined Sarah Friar and left her out of investment meetings. Wouldn't it be crazy? I'm just going to go out on a limb here. I don't think this is going to happen, but if the CFO were to leave OpenAI right before the IPO, that would be an oh shit moment for this AI bubble. I don't think it's going to happen because Sarah Friar likely has a huge amount of shares that she personally needs to do well in order to in order to make all the money she's been promised share-based compensation at OpenAI. But she clearly doesn't want this to happen, and Altman does. And, well, I don't know, as the CFO and the one who signs off on the books, if there is something untoward happening behind the scenes at OpenAI, she would be just as culpable as Altman. OpenAI is planning to launch a tender sale of its shares to provide liquidity to employees in the coming weeks before the company goes public, according to a person familiar with the matter, and a spokesperson declined to comment. So it looks like this is happening, guys. I don't know when exactly, but it is coming. All right, now on to what happened in Korea. A massive 16% market swing just rocked South Korea over 24 hours. The retail ants holding the wheel are driving dangerously. And again, that's not my phrasing. Apparently, that's how they refer to retail day traders in South Korea. They call them ants. And they're driving dangerously. Tuesday's reversal was the fifth largest ever recorded by the Kospi benchmark. After one of the largest one-day declines on record on Monday, South Korea's high-flying stock market recouped almost all those losses on Tuesday. These wild swings, -8.3% and then +8.2%, are not quite without precedent, but clearly illustrate how speculative and volatile the equity market has become with rampant activity from retail investors, many of them operating on leverage. And yeah, they're saying that they're not quite without precedent, but those precedents are not exactly what you want to be compared to. We'll see that in just a minute here. Monday's sheer drop of 676 points would send the Kospi tumbling back down below 8,000. It was part of a three-day slump. It was the fifth most severe on record. But tellingly, two of the others took place in 2026, suggesting the volatility is becoming more of a feature of the market rather than a bug. Since 1992, the Korean market has had 10 one-day reversals of 14% or more, with the largest on record being the 12% drop on March 4th this year, then followed by a 9% rebound. Other bouts of frenetic roller coaster volatility occurred during the Asian contagion of 1997, the dot-com crash of 2000-2001, the global financial crisis in 2008, and the pandemic in 2020. This 16% fluctuation then is pretty dramatic, but it's not a one-off. Oh, yeah, so don't worry. We've seen this before. We saw it during the Asian bond market contagion, the dot-com crash, the GFC, and COVID. Oh, good. Nobody ever. Notice none of those were particularly good times for markets. And look at the move in the Kospi index. These are daily candles. And again, guys, this is the index. This is not a single stock. This is the whole freaking index. Down 8.4% yesterday, and then a big gap up, not quite back to the Friday close, still a little bit short, but virtually wiping out the entirety of that sell-off. And again, that's that one-day sell-off. Korean stocks had been selling off for 3 days before that. The ants are driving recklessly in Korea. Who had that one on their 2020s bingo? Meanwhile, China preps $295 billion plan to fund nationwide AI build-out. Is this really happening, or is this just Bloomberg wagging the dog? You let me know in the comments. China is preparing to spend around 2 trillion yuan, or $295 billion, over the next 5 years on building data centers across the country, fueling Beijing's ambition to propel the domestic AI sector and surpass the U.S. in a potentially game-changing technology. Key government agencies, including the National Development and Reform Commission, are drafting a blueprint to erect a network of interconnected computing hubs across the country, people familiar with the matter said. State firms such as China Mobile and China Telecom will operate the bulk of the data centers and ensure they're connected, one of the people said. The idea is to rely on local suppliers, including Huawei, for at least 80% of technology such as AI chips, effectively squeezing out NVIDIA and AMD, the people said. The overarching plan represents Beijing's most aggressive endeavor yet to lay the foundation for future Chinese development. It recalls the undertakings of years past that marshaled resources to support national champions like Huawei with the aim of replacing U.S. technology. And it's a key prong of the Six Networks program announced earlier this year, covering construction of essential infrastructure spanning water and electricity to computing, one of the people said. All right, blank of the people said. Some people said, according to people said, people familiar with the matter. No sources, as always. And again, China has largely sat out this AI race. I hear so much about this AI race. Oh, if we don't, China will. Again, China has built maybe a tenth of what we have built in the United States. I mean, there is no race. If the other guy is running at one-tenth of the speed you're running, it's not a race. And then all of a sudden, President Trump is like, yeah, we're going to buy stakes in these big AI companies, mostly because their IPOs are not looking so good and they need a bailout. And we don't want the stock market to crash on my watch. Bloomberg is like, yeah, all the people who pay for advertising on our site would really love if that were to happen. Plus, we've been waving our pom-poms for this AI rally for 3-4 years now. So let's cook up this story about China bailing out their AI industry. And then maybe that could help because, you know, the initial focus groups and polling of President Trump's AI bailout didn't appear so popular with people. But if you have that big, bad foreign enemy to compete with, maybe the taxpayers will go along with it. Plus my dividends, you know, the AI dividends they're promising, like the Doge dividends and the tariff dividends. All right, as this is going on, Taiwan mulls curbs on AI chip exports to China to align with the U.S., Taiwan authorities are considering much stricter export controls on AI chip sales to China to further align with U.S. measures, according to people familiar with the matter. An effort to address semiconductor smuggling that risks drawing a rebuke from Beijing. Yeah, a rebuke over semiconductors. That's the real threat to Taiwan from Beijing. Sure. The idea is to give authorities more legal tools to address diversion of advanced hardware like AI servers with NVIDIA chips from Taiwan to China. Such sales are already banned under U.S. regulations unless companies get Washington's permission per curbs the U.S. first imposed in 2022 to prevent Beijing from using advanced NVIDIA processors to gain a military edge. Taiwan, however, doesn't consider unauthorized AI chip exports to China to be a crime, while Taiwan authorities do warn the potential sellers that may be breaking U.S. rules should they proceed. The only legal recourse through the island's courts is to charge suspected smugglers with violations of other existing local laws. This can be a harder bar to meet, narrowing the scope of cases Taiwan can currently pursue. Taiwan authorities made their first known detentions of alleged chip smugglers last month on charges of falsifying documents. Those were three people working for Supermicro Computer who were using hair dryers to peel the labels off of freaking servers and then put dummy labels on top of them. As part of the ongoing trade talks with the U.S., Taipei officials are considering imposing much stronger AI chip controls that would restrict sales to all customers in China, not just specific companies, on an export blacklist that includes the likes of Huawei, said the people who requested anonymity to discuss sensitive matter. And nobody ever names their sources anymore. That would enable Taiwan to prosecute AI chip smuggling to China as a criminal violation for the first time. All right. As that's going on, we've got more debt in the AI space too. CoreWeave plans European investor calls for potential debt sale because the $35 billion pile of debt they're currently sitting on isn't quite big enough. CoreWeave is to hold calls with European high-yield investors on Tuesday as the AI infrastructure provider considers financing transactions that may include dollar and euro bonds. The company, which leases AI data center capacity to clients such as OpenAI and Meta, has appointed JP Morgan & Co. to arrange the calls, according to people familiar with the matter, who asked not to be identified. Founded in 2017 as a crypto miner, CoreWeave amassed a trove of NVIDIA graphics processing units in its early days. Today, it operates nearly 50 data centers across North America and Europe. AI-related debt issuance has ramped up recently, with hyperscalers tapping all corners of the world's debt capital markets to raise hundreds of billions of dollars. Amazon completed a record Canadian dollar bond sale this week. So far, however, much of the euro debt has been investment grade, and European high yield investors have had little AI-related exposure to choose from. And again, when you hear high yield, I need you to think junk, dog shit, like this company is super risky. And of course, that's what CoreWeave is. CoreWeave is high yield, not investment grade, rated Ba3 by Moody's, B+ by S&P, and BB- by Fitch. There's a reason for those ratings, because this company's business model is inherently fraud. They're never going to turn a profit, and the only way they're going to avoid bankruptcy is if NVIDIA buys them in order to avoid the headline risk. Meanwhile, Kuwait offers oil to Asian buyers for the first time since the war. All right. Apparently, some oil is getting past the blockade. Kuwait is offering to sell its crude to refiners in Asia for the first time since the Iran war started, the latest indication of rising oil flows through the Strait of Hormuz. At least 4 million barrels of the nation's main export grade carried on two very large crude carriers are being offered to refiners in at least China and South Korea, traders familiar with the matter said, asking not to be identified. The offers add to evidence that Hormuz flows are starting to open up, a trend that has coincided with increased U.S. coordination of transits. The UAE has also been selling millions of barrels of oil from inside the Persian Gulf to refiners in Asia. Still, flows remain far below pre-war levels. Oil from the region's fifth largest producer loads from deep inside the Persian Gulf, requiring tankers to run the Hormuz gauntlet to reach global markets. It's also a sign that Persian Gulf producers are increasingly able to send tankers out despite Tehran's threat to shipping through the strait. Traders said that the oil is being offered directly by state-owned Kuwait Petroleum Corp rather than an intermediary. The barrels in question have already exited the waterway and can be taken to ports in Asia promptly, they said, without elaborating on the sales terms. All right, so somewhere around 1.5 to 2 million barrels a day is getting out of the Gulf, plus the several million barrels that are being diverted west to the Red Sea, which so far remains open, even though Houthi and the Blowfish have been claiming they're going to start closing off shipping there. And you've also got a big decline in Chinese imports. And all those reasons are why the price of oil is still sitting here below $90 a barrel. And this chart from Giovanni Stanovo on X is pretty important here. China's crude imports were 7.82 million barrels per day in May of 2026 versus 9.40 in April of 2026, 11.02 in May of 2025, and 11.11 in May of 2024, 12.1 million barrels per day in May of 2023. So you can see here, almost 4 million barrels per day less oil is being imported by the Chinese right now. And you're talking about 20 million barrels of original flow through the Strait of Hormuz. You got about 2 million is still getting through. Somewhere between 5 and 7 is flowing west out through the Red Sea. You've got about 4 million barrels less being imported by the Chinese, plus another 2.5, maybe 3 million barrels of global oil reserves are being dumped by the U.S., Europe, and Japan. And that is how the world has been able to make up for the shortfall in the Strait of Hormuz, all these things combined. But the Chinese have been eating about a quarter of that. Now, that's just less imports. China is still consuming the same amount of oil, which means the Chinese are also tapping their reserves rather dramatically here. And you can see here, big drop off in imports. China is floating the world, if you will, by buying up less oil, something they did not do in 2022 when the Russians invaded Ukraine and we dumped the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. The Chinese actually increased their buying during that episode. They're not doing that this time around. And apparently the fertilizer markets are starting to calm down too. Crop and fertilizer markets wipe out Iran war risk premium. The Iran war risk premium that swept through crop and fertilizer markets is rapidly evaporating as fears of prolonged supply disruptions fade, easing one of the biggest threats to food inflation. Prices of urea, one of the world's most important crop nutrients, have plunged more than 30% since mid-April, wiping out the gains triggered by the conflict. That's dragging down prices of corn, wheat, and other farm products, with the Bloomberg Agriculture Spot Index tracking 10 of the world's most traded crops, falling to its lowest level since March 5th on Friday. That's the first week of the war, by the way. It's a dramatic reversal from the early weeks of the war when the effective closure of the Strait of Hormuz choked off about a third of globally traded urea supplies, sending prices soaring and leaving farmers scrambling for alternatives. The decline may curb farm input costs and slow the pace of food inflation, but experts caution that energy prices remain elevated while fertilizer is still sensitive to flare-ups in Middle East tensions. The collapse in prices of urea, the most widely used nitrogen fertilizer, came after China eased export restrictions and as the market takes into account supply stranded at Hormuz, according to Fertistream, one of the world's largest fertilizer traders. Lackluster grain prices have also curbed demand from farmers, said Milton Sato, the company's head of global market intelligence. Now, that last bit is kind of worrying there. Lackluster prices have curbed demand from farmers, lackluster grain prices. So farmers have less fertilizer demand. That means next year's crop yields or this fall's crop yields are probably going to be lower, which means food prices would come in higher after that due to lower crop production. So maybe some short-term inflation relief here, but that last sentence there is a little worrisome in the long term. And you can see here in this chart that they're showing on Bloomberg here, we had this big spike in urea prices after the war began. We went up as high as $710 per short ton, up from about $458 at the start of the war. Now we are back to $450. So that entire spike has now gone away. So at least, and again, in this case, the Chinese lifting export curbs, largely responsible for this decline in prices. All right, but that is not the only risk to inflation, and there's some inflation risks hiding in this article here as well from Bloomberg this morning. U.S. small business optimism falls to the lowest since October of 2024. An index of U.S. small business optimism fell in May to the lowest level since October of 2024, erasing almost all the gains seen since President Trump was elected for a second term. The National Federation of Independent Business Optimism Index fell 0.6 points to 95.3, according to data out Tuesday. The measure had climbed to a six-year high in December of 2024 following the election. Rising prices and economic uncertainty due to the Iran war continue to hang over companies. 70% of small business owners reported that supply chain disruptions affected their business to some extent, up 6 points from April. The share of owners citing inflation as their most important business problem climbed for a third straight month. The net share of owners raising selling prices climbed to 36%. That's the highest in more than 3 years. And more price hikes are in the pipeline for consumers. A similar share planned to increase prices in the next 3 months. All right, so we've got one third of people have already raised prices. Another third plan to raise them more. And again, this is small businesses here. The small business tends to be less resilient to supply disruptions than big businesses who can tap into the bond market or big banks if they need to. But this suggests that big spike we saw in energy in headline CPI earlier this year is going to bleed over into higher core inflation as those higher input costs drive up the cost of everything else. We'll just have to see tomorrow. We get CPI tomorrow morning. I'm sure we will have plenty to say about that. Market is calling for, I believe, 4.2% is what the market expects for headline CPI tomorrow. And last but not least, this damn worm again. A flesh-eating cattle parasite spreads beyond Texas as new screwworm cases are found. And there's the adult screwworm. I don't know what you call them as an adult. But three more cases of New World screwworm have been confirmed, including one outside the main cluster in Texas, demonstrating the difficulty of stopping a resurgent pest that could devastate the nation's cattle industry, the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced Monday. The screwworm is actually a fly larva that eats living flesh instead of dead material. The flies lay their eggs in open wounds of animals like cattle, but wildlife, pets, and occasionally humans can be infested. The government has a program to breed sterile male flies and drop swarms of them out of planes to mate with wild females, which kept screwworm contained at the southern end of Panama for decades. So far, there are five confirmed cases, three calves and a goat in Texas, and a dog from neighboring Lee County, New Mexico. The small dog, which the USDA initially reported as a Texas case, lives in New Mexico and was reclassified as the first in that state. The dog had not traveled to Mexico or Texas, so authorities were investigating around the property where the pet lived. So far, efforts to contain the screwworm are not successful. We've got more cases, this time in a second state in New Mexico now. Farmers just can't catch a break. And I just want to say thank you very much to everybody for having your coffee with us this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out, should you feel so inclined. Thank you also to my magnanimous Melonhead supporters on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links down below in the description to all that good stuff. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.